ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, former CFO Jim Milas tells us about his success through laughter. Country band Western Avenue keeps it fresh. And season one of the epic mind movie, The Cleansed. Right after the news you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Leave it to the first black late night host to take 19 years off work and come back here and expect my job to still be waiting for me. That was Arsenio Hall on the debut episode of his new Arsenio Hall show, after taking, like you said, 19 years off, the man of the 90s is back on television. Exactly. Still doing the fist bump and everything. And, you know, a lot has changed in the world since Bill Clinton was on there playing Heartbreak Hotel.
It's amazing, Jerry, to think about it, because when Arsenio Hall started the show, Clinton wasn't even president.
Yeah, that's true. And now he's not again. So it's come full circle. Yeah. It's totally come full circle.
He's like,
A lot of people are saying good things about – I like Arsenio Hall personally. It's getting a lot of good press. You know, late night is definitely a genre that has been dominated essentially by –
white men.
White men, exactly. So, you know, there have been other attempts in the past to inject, let's say, some color into it, and they've been varying degrees of success. But so far, it's getting very good reviews. Well, his first guest, you know, was Chris Tucker, a man who he had on before.
I saw the first show.
Yeah. What did you think?
You know what? I liked Arsenio Hall, and I liked the show. I watched it when it first came out. It just didn't do it for me.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. It was just like maybe it'll get better as it goes along, but he was trying too hard.
Let's just hope it's not another Chevy Chase. I mean, that's all I'm asking for. But I really thought it was kind of funny. And, you know, I'm a child of the 90s, so to speak. You know, I was a teenager in the 90s, and he made a lot of jokes in his opening monologue that I thought were hilarious. I got a couple of them here for you. He said, "A lot has changed. Back then, you could invite Mel Gibson and a Jewish guy to the same party. Can't do that anymore. Back then, the only doctor that prescribed marijuana was Dr. Dre." I tell the kids, back then, Instagram was a cocaine delivery service. I mean, his opening monologue was really quite funny, and I thought that the pace of the show was good. You know, I thought it had a good tempo, and I'll give it a chance. I really will. I like Arsenio Hall. I've enjoyed the movies he's done over the years. I loved him in Coming to America. He was great in that. And actually, one of my favorite movies of all time is a little known film called Amazon Women on the Moon. From the 80s, and he had a bit part in it, and to this day, still one of the funniest physical sketch comedy scenes I've ever watched in my entire life. So I'm going to give him a shot.
Well, yeah, maybe you can give him a tweet, too.
And maybe I will.
Yeah, if you don't like him, I mean, you could go to Twitter and just complain about him, because that's what everybody does.
Well, that's what Twitter was invented for, right?
Right, to complain about things? So. I don't know. But if you really want to complain about something, what you can do is actually buy advertising time on Twitter, so that if you want to complain about something, you're not just complaining about to your few friends that follow you. You can complain to a huge amount of people.
I didn't know you could do that.
I'm going to tell you, Charlie, all about it. No, a passenger on British Airways, they lost his luggage. And when he went to go and complain about it, they wouldn't return his emails. So he went to Twitter to vent and he purchased what's called promoted tweets, which is Twitter's form of advertising. And this spread his message to not just his regular people. It, in fact, made 25,000 impressions in the first 6 hours. So what did he say? Don't fly British Airways. Their customer service is horrendous. They're the worst airline ever. They lost their luggage and they can't even track it down. Here, thanks for ruining my EU business trip, British Airways.
Hashtag British Airways.
Yeah, hashtag British Airways.
So how does this work with Twitter? Because I know you sign up to follow somebody or people follow you. How does he reach out to people that it would make an impression on?
Well, so he purchased these promoted tweets so that it's trending, like that these topics are become trending.
So everybody who signs up like for trending and those sorts of things sees it.
Right. And then one of the guys from EasyJet picked it up and retweeted it. So that's
good opportunity.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Just like with that Virgin one. Remember that Richard Branson picked it up and retweeted it?
Absolutely. So he paid $1,000 to go and complain about this stuff. But, you know, I want to ask you, I mean, this would not stop me from flying on British Airways. They lose luggage all the time, airlines. So this guy he got stuck. I can't imagine this would stop me. If they had a good deal on a flight, I'm going to London.
But what it would do is probably get you a free flight to London and your luggage back.
Yeah, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, and maybe it was worth $1,000 just for the chance to vent. You know, I mean, it's a basic human need that people hear us. So maybe that chance to make, you know, 300,000 people hear what a crappy experience he had was worth the money. Or it could be that he was trying to shame British Airways into giving better service to future customers.
Well, whatever his goal was, it certainly was accomplished because it was, you know, retweeted 500,000 times and we're talking about it on the radio. So,
Yeah, best $1,000 ever.
Well, he had something to be upset about, too. I mean, he lost his luggage. You know, God knows what was in there. It was probably something very important to him. His business meeting. I mean, that is.
But the whole thing is it's a new trend in Twitter because now it's not just because usually it's companies that buy these promoted tweets kind of a thing as a form of advertising. And now it's people buying it.
The average person can say, hey, man, I'm just not expendable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're not expendable. And, you know, if they're going to be like Dr. Fraser Crane, they might come in with a big old AK-47 and start blowing everybody away.
Did I miss that episode?
Well, you didn't miss it on Cheers or Fraser. Kelsey Grammer, though, is going to be starring in The Expendables 3. Everybody knows Sylvester Stallone has been producing these movies, which star a ton of familiar names, people like Mel Gibson, Harrison Ford, Wesley Snipes, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Antonio Banderas, Dolph Lundgren, and Jet Li as action heroes, basically, doing all kinds of stuff. You know, it's a franchise flick, and this will be the third installment. And while The Expendables 3 finds Grammer playing the role of Bonaparte, a recruited mercenary for the first time, he has played a tough politician and a Star Series boss, and appeared in 2006's X-Men, The Last Stand. So he has some experience. You know, he's not just Fraser Crane, which, well, I can see why, though, this would be in the news, why people would be thinking, you know, Dr. Fraser Crane in The Expendables 3, because he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would be in an action movie running around with a gun. You know, somebody like Nicolas Cage maybe fits the role better, but he declined to be in it.
I think he's going
to
be good. I mean, and I like the thing, you know, he's going to be Bonaparte, you know? Because that's almost like a play on Dr. Fraser Crane.
You just got blown apart by Bonaparte. I see a perfect tagline. Yeah, because you look at this list, you go Terry Crews, Jason Statham, Dolph Lundgren. I mean, these are action people. You see, you know, Kelsey Grammer, you don't instantly jump to action hero, but it's those breaking of genre or breaking of character that this could be amazing. It really could.
I could just picture it though. Okay, Dolph Lundgren, I'm listening.
The criminal mastermind.
Are you listening to me? Good. Now listen to the sound of my AK-47.
Yes.
Yeah. And speaking of listening,
in a world where you can get behind me,
and stay there. You stay there. Okay, I'm practicing. Because, you know, In a World is actually something that is found in many trailers, movie trailers. So Lake Bell, she directed, wrote, and lead acted in her debut feature called In a World. And the title is based on that most repeated opening line in the history of film advertising. And she plays Carol, a vocal coach who's trying to make a dent in the commercial world doing voiceover gigs. And she is auditioning to utter that famed movie trailer phrase. Her character really has a blend of shyness and goofiness and charm. And she is the daughter of the trailer business's reigning voiceover champ, played by Fred Melamed.
And he really is a reigning voiceover champ.
he is. And you know what? I actually saw this movie, Maya.
What did you think of it, Charlie?
It was great. Christy, I highly recommend that you go see it. Anybody that's in that business is just like, it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And, you know, just throughout the, you know, I'm not a voiceover artist, but I imagine you would see people doing a lot of this because she's talking to, you know, someone in the movie. They're eating breakfast and they're like, you know, like, hey, can you pass the toast or whatever? And she goes, it's the toast. The toast that you would like to have. You know, he goes like, quit doing that, man.
every time she talks, it's an opportunity to, right, to practice the voiceover work.
Yeah, they're laying in bed together. And she goes, he got up and left her.
Narrating her own life. That sounds great.
Well, Belle also says that she has like a scoop of a message on top. That's the way she put it. Since in her own kind of comedic way, she is shining the light on a major gender imbalance, and because it's a male monopolized kind of industry.
True.
And
so she actually, I found a different interview where she was talking about it. She says, when I first came to Hollywood, I was sure I was going to be one of the world's greatest voiceover artists. I didn't realize how cutthroat it was. I genuinely think that female voices should be used more for trailers and other jobs. When there are movies that are directed demographically at female viewers, chick flicks, if you will, why aren't there female voiceovers on these movies? We wouldn't have a male voice on a tampon commercial. That's a really good point.
In a world where you feel not so fresh.
Oh, no. I don't want to know that world.
Yeah, she was actually nude on the cover of New York Magazine recently. She has some great views about that. She says, I have a sense of humor about nudity and all that. It's like, hey, so what? We all get naked. In a more serious way, there is a female empowerment. There's something powering about being nude and just owning it. So I like the role that she's playing in kind of helping us think about gender issues in the whole Hollywood business in a different way.
That's a great, great story, Maya. And I was, you know, looking at some of the other things that she's done, and she's quite an accomplished actress.
Yeah, she is. She's been in a number of different movies and shows, and I like that she these days is really trying to have a different voice behind it in terms of the directing.
Yeah, you know, I've seen that she was the woman that Ashton Kutcher dumped Natalie Portman for in No Strings Attached, and I didn't know that she was the girl in that was the second wife in It's Complicated for Alec Baldwin and Meryl Streep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but what she points out is that it's always kind of like she's the cast as the kooky friend or the romantic patsy. She's never really like in that lead role. She's always kind of the second one.
So back. She wants to be more like in a world where I am the lead actress.
Exactly.
But you know what's funny about the trailer business is that it's not just gender bias on that. It's actually like 12 guys that do that, because I have a friend who does voiceovers, and for him, he has that kind of in a world voice, and for him to try and get into that market is so tough because it's really dominated by, you know, these few guys that really own that business.
Yeah, they monopolize it.
Yeah, the whole voiceover business is really quite fascinating. I've listened to a number of interviews with like Tara Strong and H. John Benjamin, you know, people that do a fair amount of voice work. And I'm surprised how much goes on behind the scenes. You think, oh, there's a guy with a great voice or a girl with a great voice, but it's not, there's not just that. There's a whole lot more to it. So I really want to see that film.
It's a good film. And I really like Miles In a World, where get behind me, not stay there.
Yeah. A world where you can get behind me.
Well, like most people. Well, I'll tell you, I really want to see that movie. And like most people, I hope it comes on Netflix or Hulu or YouTube, because like a number of Americans, that's where I get the majority of my television these days. And I'm not the only one. In fact, the Nielsen rating company recently released a report that said that the number of American households that don't have television, TV sets, has gone from 1.1% to 3.3% in 1 year.
Well, what blew me away about that is that I cannot believe that that many people own TVs. I was like, oh my gosh, you mean only one, like a little more than 1%
of... Did not have a television.
Blows me away.
They don't have healthcare, but they got a TV. You know, it is, yeah. It's one of those things that...
99%.
So you could talk to your doctor about Cialis.
Right, exactly. There was the article that I was reading about, there was a family that was talking about how they went from paying $150 a month to about $15 a month. Between Netflix, YouTube, and Hulu Plus, and they get the majority of their television that way. They all the shows that they like to see. Their 2-year-old daughter loves Sesame Street. They get all the Sesame Street she can handle. They get their Downton Abbey fix. It really, you know, we talked last month about the Google's new Chromecast, which allows you to watch TV on, you know, any internet-related device. And this family uses one called Roku, which is a little more expensive. It's a $90 device, but some 900,000 U.S. households have dropped cable in the past year alone, which I am frankly thrilled for. In fact, South Park addressed that just last week on their on last week's episode about the cable company and how, you know, you're forced to buy the packages and all that kind
see
of stuff.
I didn't see it on TV.
Oh, that's right. See, you know, well, if you must know, I watched it on the internet as I watch almost everything.
Me too.
You know, those days of having to be home by 9 p.m. to watch something are gone.
Oh, that's
you know what? That just totally blows me away. And I'll give you guys a quick example about that, because the internet age is great. You know, I love Netflix. I just love it. And it's the best bargain in the world. I mean, you can't get, you know, a better deal than that. And so many people can use it all at once. But, you know, I still, like, if I want to watch something that's on television, say it's a show, like Person of Interest or whatever, I am still from that generation where it showed and I didn't see it. And I go like, damn, I missed that show. I wanted to see it. And my kids are like, well, why don't you just watch it on demand?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, I can still watch it? Oh.
I grew up, you know, I still grew up in that era, too, you know, where you had to watch it on TV, and we only had, you know, 3 or 4 channels, and then we got cable, and it was awesome. But I've started to embrace it where I'm a busy guy. I don't have that much time, and there are certain things I like to watch, and that's what Netflix and Hulu are
for. Can I take a quick poll? Who has a television?
I do.
Do you all have TVs?
I don't.
I do.
You don't have a television.
I do. I have a Sony Google TV.
Okay. So, Maya, you don't pay for cable.
No, obviously. I don't, but I'm a TV junkie. That's the ironic thing. Because I watch so much reality TV, don't tell anyone, but I watch it either through Hulu or directly from the actual TV station's websites.
South Park to broadcast
I mean,
their
and
stuff.
That's a trip, because like I've just recently, there was a couple of episodes I wanted to see of Jimmy Fallon, and I just don't ever stay up that late to watch Jimmy Fallon live. And but he had on Miley Cyrus, and then the other one was Paul McCartney.
Oh yeah, I saw that one.
And so I watched them in the morning before I went to work.
Yep.
On Hulu.
Mm-hmm. Why would you? Why would you stay up until midnight to watch an interview when
because
you can catch it the next day?
No. That's what we do.
No, what we do in America is we find an easier way to do everything. This is much easier.
Yeah, but then you're not watching. You're watching it on your computer, though.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can watch it on my TV.
Oh, you watch it on your TV. Yeah. So you have it all set up.
Yeah, I have an internet TV.
Okay.
Chrissy, do you have a TV?
Yeah, I have cable. I mean, I'm just, you know, old school. Because you know what it is? I don't like sitting because the computer is small. Like, I have a 40-inch television, and it's nice and big. I like watching a big screen.
I have a huge computer screen, so maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I do is...
Is it 40 inches, though? I mean...
Mine's 57 inches.
Unintentional.
Okay. Chrissy, that's a... That's a little bit more information than we need to know. But
well, I have a $60 Blu-ray player that connects to the internet.
She said $60, not $60.
Oh, yes. I have a $60 Blu-ray player that I got at Walmart that connects directly to Netflix and YouTube and all that. It goes right into my TV, and it also plays Blu-rays. I think it's a smoking deal.
Well, I have the Google TV, and anything you can do on a computer, you can just do on the TV.
Yep, exactly.
And that's the way that it's going.
So, and like we had that one segment we did about the Chromecast thing that you're talking about.
Yep.
And that just plugs into the back of a TV. And then you can pick up anything on the internet. And you can use your remote control as a keyboard.
Good point. I'm so old school. Like, I watch my TV. I wait for, you know what? I wait for, like, the reporters to disseminate all the facts before I read all the stuff on Twitter. Then find out all the rumors. And then you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't like all that
stuff. But when it comes to the movies, you still can't beat going to the theater.
Going to the theater. No, you absolutely should go to the theater. You should go to film festivals and the theater. There's a new movie out it's going to challenge you a little bit. It's called 12 Years a Slave, which is a new film by Steve McQueen, and it was at the Toronto Film Festival. And I saw the trailer for this, and I got to tell you, this is going to be a tough movie to watch, but I think a very important one. It tells the story of Solomon Northrop, who was a free black man from New York, who in 1841 was enticed to go to D.C. on a job offer, and these supposed employees kidnapped him and sold him into slavery in New Orleans. And he was there for 12 years. But anyway, I mean, it's the story of what he went through and just how, you know, he started out as a free man and then he just got abducted and sold into slavery. And it stars a huge cast of people. It's got Michael Fassbender, Chiwetel Ejiofor, who's the main person. Oh, God.
Brad Pitt.
I think James Franco's involved in it.
James Franco's in everything.
Yeah.
I know. Frank.
I think he's also the DP and the associate producer on it.
And Benedict Cumberbatch, I think, is in it. He's in everything, but it should be pretty amazing.
Well, that's one of the amazing things about it. You know, the movie is fantastic. The book is fantastic, and it's a true story, and it's published by Blackstone Audio.
Oh, excellent. But, you know, it's funny. When I saw it in the trailer, you know, the theater, we're all like sort of chit-chatting away, and then that came on, and everyone was just sort of silent. It was like, my gosh, you know, that's going to be... We're going to have to see that.
You know, I saw the director who did the film, and he's British.
Yeah, and Steve McQueen.
Right. He's British, and he's, you know, Steve McQueen, one of the most famous American actors ever.
Right.
Oh, it's not the same guy? Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. But, you know, he was talking, and they were making that point, Chrissy, about how, you know, it's going to be difficult to take because it's such sensitive issues about slavery and things like that. Actually, the interview was with Jon Stewart, and Jon Stewart's got like, a real black eye for America. We were at the last country to abolish slavery. Mm-hmm. Steve McQueen made a really fascinating point. He goes, you know what? He goes, it's not just an American story. He goes, although it happens in America because you were the last country to abolish slavery. He goes, it's everyone's story. He goes, there was slavery in the Roman times. There was slavery in England. There was slavery in Africa. He goes, there's slavery everywhere. Everybody has a black eye with this.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, America, though, the American slave trade only accounted for 3% of the global slave trade during that period. Hmm. But once again, you know, because it's America and every, you know, we're on in a glass bubble, everything that we do gets scrutinized and reported on. And, you know, it's a huge black eye.
Yeah, well, it seems like the American audience should be able to stomach this a little bit better after Django Unchained, right?
Well, I mean,
that movie was huge. Everybody saw it. And so we've already kind of been inundated with some of these images and, you know, what goes on in slavery. So 12 Years a Slave, when it comes out, I'm sure people, you know, will be able to digest it and watch it.
And, you know, Oscar buzz. Yeah, Chiwetel looks amazing in this.
I think that was at Toronto, right, that they released that?
Yes.
Yeah, the Toronto Film Festival. And I'm pretty sure they released it on Friday night, which, you know, has become kind of the big night for Toronto. I think last year Argo premiered on the Friday night.
Right.
The King's Speech was the year before that. So, you want to talk about
this thing's going on the Friday night, but that's amazing. Okay. Friday night at Toronto. Who knew?
Yeah.
That's the place crazy to be if you want an Oscar. I'm obsessed with Argo. I can't stop watching that. I love it. I just love it.
I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to. One of my best friends, her dad was there during the revolution and just barely got out. And
oh my gosh.
I'm a huge Ben Affleck fan too, and John Goodman. So I definitely want to see it. I just haven't yet.
I think Ben Affleck should just be a 70s guy because he looks like crazy good looking with the beard and the hair.
Especially with the big mustache.
I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, like, do you like Argo that much? Or is it just this thing with Ben Affleck?
No, I think the movie is so, but
let's
see,
so let's
compelling.
Say, let's say
I
that movie starred Jerry Renfro. Would you be seeing it a million times?
No.
If it was made the same way, I think it's brilliant.
So Jerry, maybe you should be Argo
maybe
for
should.
Halloween.
Maybe. And then maybe I'll get to be Batman after that.
Right.
Cyrus,
you could be Robin.
Who would you be, Charlie?
Jay's sidekick.
Who would I be? I'd be the Joker. Who else?
Well, you know, you guys know Ben Affleck's the new Batman, right? in the Man of Steel sequel. Yeah, Batman versus Superman. It's Ben Affleck.
Okay, we know it now.
The inside scoop.
Hopefully he'll still have that awesome 70s mustache.
Well, yeah, hopefully.
Now I'm in the know.
Yeah, now you are in the know. Maybe maybe Ben Affleck can you know, repair his reputation after he does his Batman movie. How do you repair your reputation, Cyrus?
Well, you may not be able to repair it on the internet, but you can definitely find out what's going on with your reputation. You know, and this is becoming a bigger thing because, you know, the internet, everybody's using it. People are using social networks, posting pictures. People are talking about you. So there's all this information that goes on the internet. It doesn't get taken down. And when you go to look for a job or, you know, if somebody, you meet somebody and they want to find out more about you, chances are they're going to go to the internet and get information. So what you need to do to protect yourself and your reputation is do that yourself. And here are three simple things you can do to find out what your reputation is online. First of all, you just do a simple Google search. You put your name in Google, search, and see what comes up.
Have you guys ever done that?
Of course.
So
I've done it.
And I have a very unusual name, Maya Seligman. And so I thought, okay, the majority of this stuff is all about me. But it turns out there's like this 17-year-old British girl from, well, she, her name is Maya Seligman. And the thing is, like, she cannot spell and she uses a swear word in every other word. So it's like, I am mortified. And she has like pink punk hair.
Oh my God.
And so I'm like, no, that's not me, I swear. So like there have been even like.
You almost want to write her a letter and go, look, you are ruining both of our reputations. Grow up, stop swearing, cut your hair.
Yeah, because she like even did some really bad Facebook post. And so I Googled my name. Oh. It was like the Facebook post came up of like, why?
I am amazed how cavalier some people are with information on the internet. Because once it's on the internet, it's never going to go away. Somebody somewhere is going to keep it. So aside from the Google search, what else can we do?
Well, when you do the Google search, there will be another tab on there, which is an image search. So if you click on that, then you can find out, you know, what kind of images are up there. Maybe somebody took some pictures of you at a party, you're a little drunk. It's going to be there.
Maybe a video of you singing Happy Birthday like Marilyn Monroe.
Yes, exactly. Yes, of course. And, you know, if you can find the pictures, if you can see them, then you might be able to take steps to have them taken down, or, you know, maybe you can put up some kind of disclaimer to protect yourself. And the last thing you can do, the third thing, is use Google Alerts. So if you sign up for Google Alerts, you can put in like keywords, like your name and things like that. And then every time something is indexed, a new article is indexed, you will get an email sent to your inbox telling you that your name has just come up. Somebody's just posted a picture. And then you can go check that out and see what's going on and protect your reputation. Because right now, that's where it's at. Those are a couple easy things you can do.
I think they call that one the paparazzi feature.
Yeah, but there is a feature on Google, and it's called Me on the Web. And you can go to Google and put on Me on the Web, and it'll show you everything about you that you ever wanted to know and didn't want to know.
Oh, no.
And you could, you know, the thing is you can't take it down, but you can tweak it a little bit. And the best thing you could do for all of our listeners out there on the internet is that if you have anything negative about you on the internet, the way it gets buried is if you have more positive. So if you have more posts about you, recent posts that are positive, they will be indexed first. And anything you have negative will go in cyberspace, you know, for like somebody will really have to be digging for it.
They'll go farther and farther down the list.
Go farther and farther down the list.
Have you guys ever Googled yourselves?
I have.
I have.
What did you think?
I found my dad. We have the same name.
How about you guys?
I found almost nothing. My Facebook page, that was it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I was the only Cyrus Emerson for a long time, and because I was an author, you know, I had my book was always up there, and like all this information about my book and
well, that's nice.
Stuff like that. So,
how about you, Chrissy?
Yeah, I've Googled myself. There's a few things up there that I've done. Not too, I mean, it's so mixed in with other people. So if somebody was searching for me online, I don't think they would know which was me and which was whoever else.
Yeah, because there's something common names. Like McIntyre's a common last name. Stanton's a common last name. Right. And, you know, so you get a plethora of people up there. You know, but if you're associated with something else, like if you, all of you, you know, I encourage you, if you type in your name you will come up with Get Behind Me, Not Stay There.
Right.
You'll yep. That's nice.
Yep. Yeah. You'll see some nice videos and things like that.
And I should apologize to the other Maya Seligman in case she's a Get Behind Me, Now Stay There big fan. And I just
and we just ruined
bless
it.
Bless your heart,
I apologize
Maya,
too.
And I know that there's, you know, you'll come out the other side and I fully honor, just study the English language and we'll be okay.
Yeah. The other Cyrus Emerson is in British Columbia. And
that's not that far away.
Yeah, he's like a middle schooler or something. I had all these friend requests on Facebook from like, thought they were Get Behind Me Not Stay There fans, you know.
And it turns out they're trying to find the middle school Cyrus Emerson. That's so funny. You know, I'll bet a lot of celebrities use that feature or have people that use it for them. You know, I was thinking about what you said, Charlie, about, you know, like more good things will bury the bad things.
Right.
We should come up with like a database that shows like if you if there's a picture of you drunkenly punching someone, you have to save three kittens and donate to charity this.
That's not exactly how it works. I just use the example of good because I'm a good natured person. You know, like more good will bury any negative, right?
Right.
But what it really boils down to is the more posts you have about
any
post. Any
we'll post, push it down,
good or
yeah.
bad. You know, if like, let's say I get cast as the lead role in 50 Shades of Grey, that would...
You'd be good at that. I think you'd be good.
Yeah, I'd pay money to see that.
I would pay money to see that.
Well, you guys, it's time to break out the whips and belts.
Wait, all right.
Yeah, Hollywood is gearing up for the film version of this, you know, the hotly anticipated erotic thriller.
$50 million question. Is it going to be?
Who do you
Who's in it?
Well, E.L. James, who's the author of the novels, he broke the news via Twitter that Charlie Hunnam and Dakota Johnson.
Oh, damn, they've I was been so close.
You were so close, Charlie.
Yeah. But you're the backup, Charlie.
Okay. I'm the understudy.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Hunnam, he's a 33-year-old British actor. Known
so am I.
I don't hear an accent.
Well, I'm not
Charlie
British.
Hunnam. Yeah. You do share a first name, Charlie.
You do. And, you know,
Charlie Hunnam is the star.
But I'm not quite that old yet, so.
Charlie Hunnam is the star of one of the best shows on television right now, The Sons of Anarchy. He was also in Children of Men, Pacific Rim.
So, the lead female character, Anastasia Steele, Dakota Johnson is going to be playing her. She's pretty unknown, but she does have big name parents. You guys know who those parents
Johnson,
are?
Johnson.
I'm thinking Johnson & Johnson. No.
Don Johnson?
You got it.
Is that
Don
her dad?
Don Johnson is her dad, and Melanie Griffith is her mom.
That's a good pedigree.
Yeah, and she's also the stepdaughter of Antonio Banderas and the granddaughter of the bird star Tippi Hedren.
Wow, so she's a granddaughter of Tippi Hedren. Stepdaughter of Antonio Banderas, daughter of Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith.
Wow, yeah. So there's actually somebody named Tippi?
Tippi, yeah.
Yeah, so she's been in a few films, like The 5-Year Engagement and 21 Jump
great.
Street.
That was
and
good
she
too.
Did a memorable scene with Justin Timberlake in The Social Network.
Well, who hasn't done a memorable scene with Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, but this Not is me. By far and away her biggest performance and acting challenge.
So. Yeah.
But she is a former model, so the on-screen nudity and kinky sex might come easy to her. We'll see.
Yeah, those are all those movies you mentioned are all really good movies. So, and it sounds like she's going to do a good job. And again, Hunnam, I love Charlie Hunnam. I really think he's going to do fantastic in that.
Great.
We should all go watch it together.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Now we can give our review. I'm Jerry Renfro, and here's an addendum to this month's episode. After recording, it was reported that Charlie Hunnam had been unable to fulfill the role of Christian in 50 Shades of Grey, and his role is now being replaced by Jamie Dornan. You may know Jamie Dornan as the Sheriff Graham / the Huntsman from Once Upon a Time on ABC. So again, Charlie Hunnam is out, Jamie Dornan is in. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I do know what time it is. It's time to get the answers, everyone. And when I need to know, I go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. So listen up. Higher education is coming our way. Now I love it. And God bless America.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows.
Hollywood. The magic factory. The place where dreams come true. For most aspiring writers, a lot of aspiring writers, that dream is to finally sell a screenplay and hopefully see it develop into a multi-million-dollar franchise.
Now, there are a number of factors that influence how much money a studio is willing to pay for a screenplay, including any success the writer has had in the past, if the film has a relevant or marketable hook, and most screenplays end up selling in the $50,000 to $100,000 range. That's just an average. There's cheaper, there's more. But sometimes Hollywood execs decide to take a big gamble on a screenplay and pay out a huge sum of money, hoping that the movie is going to develop. I have here a list of the 10 most expensive screenplays ever sold in Hollywood, and you may be surprised by some of them, if not all of them. I'm going to go in backwards order here. We're going to start at the bottom. Number 10 is A Knight's Tale, sold for $2.5 million. Heath Ledger was attached. The budget for that was $56 million, and it made $65 million. So I don't know if that number included the cost of the screenplay, but not a huge return. But that's gigantic compared to the next one, which was number 9, Mozart and the Whale. Hollywood executives paid $2.75 million for the screenplay, seeing as how one of the writer's previous screenplays was Rain Man, which did quite well. They budgeted $12 million, which is not a huge budget in Hollywood terms. Unfortunately, the movie only made $36,000 at the box office. So not a great ROI there. Number 8 was The Pink Panther. Steve Martin was actually paid to be in the movie and also paid $3 million to rewrite the screenplay. Now, they budgeted $80 million. Hey, Steve Martin, Pink Panther, it's a recognizable property, and it made a whopping $82 million. So just over what they spent. Number 7, Medicine Man, Sean Connery. The writer of that screenplay had previously done Dead Poets Society. So, hey, it seems like a perfect thing. We'll pay $3 million for it. They budgeted $40 million, and it made $45 million on a $40 million budget. So again, not really hitting a home run here. Number 6, though, breaks the trend. Basic Instinct. $3 million was paid for it. They budgeted $50 million, and it made $117 million. Now, the next one is a bit of an anomaly. Eurotrip. How many of you out there have seen Eurotrip? I have not, and I'm guessing most of you have not either. They paid $4 million for the screenplay to Eurotrip. It was one of those teen sex romp comedies. They budgeted $25 million, and it made $17 million. Number 4 on the list, Talladega Nights. Will Ferrell, kind of a goofy guy. We'll see how he does. We'll pay $4 million for that screenplay as well. They budgeted $72 million, and it made $150 million. So yes, they made quite a good profit on that one. Number 3 on the list also made a great profit, and that's Panic Room. Paid $4 million for the screenplay. Great investment. Budgeted $48 million, made $96 million. Now, the next one was the longest, it was the highest selling screenplay in Hollywood history. It was The Long Kiss Goodnight, starring Gina Davis, Samuel Jackson, David Morse, a great cast. They paid $4 million for the screenplay, budgeted $65 million, and brought in less than half of that, $33 million. And finally, recently surpassing The Long Kiss Goodnight as the most expensive screenplay in Hollywood, Deja Vu, starring Denzel Washington, paid $5 million for the screenplay, budgeted $75 million, and made $64 million. Now, funny story about that, I was talking with Cyrus Emerson, one of my co-hosts on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There, and he mentioned that he had seen that movie and then re-rented it a couple of months later because it was so forgettable he forgot that he had seen it. Wow, talk about your deja vu. So as you can see, 4 out of the 10 lost money, 2 out of the 10 barely made a profit, and a couple of them were what would be considered home runs. So it just goes to show that quality rises, and past behavior is not always a predictor of future behavior. I'm Jerry Renfro, and now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. So get off your rich ass and let's have some fun. Come on, y'all. Here we go. I feel like moving. I feel like shaking. I feel like dancing. I feel like dancing. Can I hear my James Brown? Jim Milas enjoys making people laugh. He shared a few laughs with the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
All right, everybody, welcome to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we're really privileged to have on Jim Milas. He's talking to us from New York City, and he is the CEO turned comedian slash success through laughter. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, we are great. We're so, so crazy about having you on, man. So for all of our listeners out there, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself and this amazing story?
Let's see. Basically, I've been a finance guy for about 22, 23 years, something like that. I've been at different banks. And then, you know, when 9/11 happened, the banking world wasn't doing so great. So I went to the not-for-profit world. I was a CFO at a controller at a hospital. And then later, a few years later, after I helped them with their finances, I was a CFO at a college for the last 7 years or so. And they were in dire straits. I mean, when I got there, they were $12 million in debt. They had years of losses, negative equity, real bad cash management. They were bouncing checks left and right, tax liens from the IRS, unfiled audits, all this stuff going on. And after a year or two, I helped them clean up. And now they're one of the most financially stable colleges in the country there.
Wow, that's quite a record.
Yeah. So I'm pretty good with numbers and all that, but I also do comedy over the last 13 years. I started doing that about 13 years ago. So straight from the office with the suit and tie, cup of coffee, briefcase, go right on stage and tell everyone my problems there.
Oh man! And where do you perform?
Oh, different clubs. Well, now it's all over the country, but when I started, it was here where I live in New York City, different places. Like my very, very first place was the Comic Strip, and I started there when I was at a party, and a comedy agent was like, you know, you have this very mellow, slow way of talking, and it might lend itself to the stage. Why don't you write some stuff, and I'll meet you at the Comic Strip. So, again, I don't know if you know about comedy, but the Comic Strip is like the Mecca. You know, this is where Seinfeld got discovered, and Ray Romano, and Chris Rock, and Eddie Murphy, and, you know, the list goes on. It's all right. The big guys, and all their pictures are on the wall. So the minute I walked in, I went straight to the bathroom and puked, and another comic came by, and he was like, don't worry, that means you care, so you'll do fine. So I have this big fear of, you know, the whole stage fright thing going. So this worked out nicely, but it all worked out great. You know, the coffee, the suit and tie, and I never looked back. So I kind of do both now.
And so, you know, who have you worked with on the stage that you just were floored? You're just like, wow, I always wanted to be here and see this guy. And now I'm working with him.
Well, I've done a different shows with different comics, and some of them, like you know, that I've been in awe of was one time we were all at the Gotham Comedy Club here in New York, and I was ready to go up, and the whole thing, I had just puked. You know, I puke almost before this call. Every show just kind of gets the nerves out for me. So I'm getting ready, and then the manager comes in and says, listen, Seinfeld just walked in. You guys all take a seat. And that's sort of how he tries his stuff out. You know, these guys just walk into any club in the city, and they're happy to have him, and he could take as long as he wants up there. And so he was up there. He even had his notes. Like, he put his notes down on the bar stool, and he just went off. And I was, like, in shock. And this was very raw material. Like, he was trying things out. And I thought he was hilarious. Like, it didn't hit every time, but it was great. And it was, like, a Tuesday night. And another one was Louis C.K. You know, I went on way, it was like a late night, and I went on after him, but it was, again, New York, it's kind of cabaret style. A comic comes up, does their time, and then they get off, and the next comic goes up, does their time, and then the next, it's kind of like that. So I'm always in awe of these guys.
Yeah, you know, those are both very, very funny comedians, and when we were talking about the your parents and stuff like that, I immediately thought of a line that Seinfeld does in his comedy act. I saw him in Colorado Springs right after the TV show had stopped airing, and he was doing small clubs all around the country.
Yeah.
And he had this line about his parents, and he goes, "You know, my parents live in they're retired now. They live in Florida." He goes, "They don't want to live in Florida, but they're over 60. And damn it, that's the law."
Yeah, he's got a lot of those stories too. And again, that's when I saw him. I think it was after his show was over, and he actually was doing a movie called Comedian, and that was him trying to come up with an hour's worth of material and showing how hard it was. And in fact, you can even see him at the Gotham. I was the guy he was talking to. He's like, "Anybody here want to be a comedian or have the thing to drive to be a comedian?" And my friends pointed to me in the audience, and he's like, "You, sir, you want to be a comedian?" And I'm like, "Yes." And you hear me, I guess, say yes, and that's it. But then he goes, "Well, this is it. I'm at the top of my game. I'm on the top tier echelon of comics, and this is what you're trying to be." And you see him playing to like seven people in the audience on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock and all that stuff. And at the time, he was trying new stuff, and nobody was laughing. I mean, I got it. I got how it could be worked into a real funny joke, but he was trying it different ways to see what works and all that.
Yeah, you have to play to your audience. And the it reminds me of Rodney Dangerfield. I just can't get no respect.
Yeah, Rodney, he's one of the pros. Like, most comics get about maybe four laughs a minute, something like that, maybe. He would get something like 11 laughs a minute to give you an idea how good he was and everything. I mean, he was king of the one-liners. I tell stories. I'm more like a Bill Cosby.
I saw Bill Cosby here in Oregon at the Brit Festival, which is in Jacksonville, Oregon. He was here last year on a tour, and he was hysterical.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, Jim. He doesn't do stand-up anymore. He does sit-down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard that. I haven't seen him at all. I'm dying to see him live, but I've heard his sets are so long, and it's all new stuff that, you know, like, he'll do 2 hours in a 5 o'clock show for 2 hours, and then do another one 2 hours later, completely new material or something. You know, most comics maybe do an hour tops.
He comes out on the stage, and there's just an easy chair there, and he comes out, and I think he smokes a cigar. He just sits in the chair and tells stories, and he talks about, you know, his life, family, and, you know, basically the same thing he's been talking about since he started, family-oriented comedy, and things like, I remember my first kiss, you know, and her name was Ethel, and I was at church, and then I found out I was going to go to hell, and he goes, I liked her, but I didn't know if it was worth the price of admission. Yeah, so he was just a funny guy. But, you know, there's, speaking of Seinfeld, I saw a thing with Seinfeld with Alec Baldwin. He did. It was a short that he did on Crackle TV, which is just exclusively for Crackle, and it was like called Comedians. You should contact them. Called Comedians Getting Coffee in Cars. And all
that's a new internet thing he's doing. Like, he just takes a ride in nice cars with comedians. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard about that.
Well, you know, he goes over and Comedians Getting Coffee in Cars is what it's called. He goes over in his car and he picks up a comedian, and they go to a coffee shop. And that's it. And they just film them and they talk. And they're not all comedians. Some of them are actors, like obvious Alec Baldwin. But I got to tell you, Alec Baldwin was so much funnier than Seinfeld.
Well,
he was
I mean, Seinfeld is very good when he's on. When he's on, he's amazing. But yeah, I know what you mean. When he's trying out new stuff, he's got to work through it a little bit. I call him a wordsmith. Like, he won't let a joke go until he makes it funny.
Right. Well, this particular episode, it wasn't that Jerry Seinfeld wasn't funny. It's just that Alec Baldwin was so surprisingly humorous. I mean, who knew?
Yeah, I wouldn't think. I thought it was basically he's funny, you know, because they give him great lines and all that stuff. I didn't know it was him that's funny, but that's great. I should look it up because I'm pretty sure it's like on the internet somewhere.
You should look it up. It's on Crackle. And Baldwin was doing these impressions. I didn't even know he did impressions. They were at the table. The waitress comes over and he asks for the order, and he asked her for a sandwich, and he asked for, you know, like something off of it or something on it. And then, you know, she goes, oh, we only do it this way. And then he starts talking like Jack Nicholson. And he's like, are we going to have to do this five easy pieces thing again? You know? Wow. And then Seinfeld's going like, you realize now you just cost me $1,000. I'm going to have to leave $1,000 tip because of your behavior.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what, Jim? I want to thank you so much for being on our show. It's been so much fun. And where can people find you and where can they see you next?
Oh, well, basically, they could reach me at jimmellis.com. That's my website. And also, or they could go to the management company, brushwoodmediagroup.com. And either way, you can get in touch with me there. There's a button you could push to see my videos, another button to see videos of my family. There's a few funny things there. My son's even funny. He doesn't like any of my stuff, but he's hilarious too. He's only 20 months and you get to see some of his stuff there. There's wonderful. One where I sit there telling him brilliant jokes and he's just staring at me, and then my wife drops a ball and he dies laughing hysterically. and then I take the ball and I try to do the same thing. And then my wife's done it 10 times. He laughed hysterically every time I do it, and he's just like staring at me like, give the ball back to mommy. All right, enough with that. There's a lot of funny stuff. So you could see that, and then click on the button that says tell me stuff, and you can email me or my management company. And also there's a charity there. Remember, one of my things was to give back and things like that. We actually do comedy shows, and it's called Making a Difference, One Laugh at a Time. The website is called givingbackisgood.org. And it basically, we do comedy shows with real funny guys. And you've probably seen some of them there. And, you know, you can look it up and see all that. They're mostly famous comics. And all the money goes to a different charity. Like the last one went to the Sandy victims here on the East Coast. And the one before that went to kids in distress situations. So we have a whole bunch of stuff going on there. And, you know, I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, and you could get me, you know, and if you want a joke every day, you can get that on Twitter and Facebook from me. That's all through my webpage there.
Okay, great. It's been great having you on. We're talking to Jim Mellis from New York City. He is a CEO turned comedian. And look for him at jimmellis.com. And, of course, we're going to feature him on justimagineinc.com. And, Jim, we'd love to have you come back on anytime.
To learn more about Jim Mellis, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com. Like that highway heading out of town, never looking back, never slowing down. The bigger and better things on the way, mile by mile, day by day. It's all about the journey and not about where we've been. Canadian band Western Avenue released their new single, Wherever You Are, from their debut self-titled EP. Western Avenue is taking their melody-driven blend of country and pop music to radio in the United States and around the globe. Already spinning on the radio in Canada, the single is poised to take Western Avenue to new heights and introduce them to a worldwide audience of country music fans. We sat down with them in Ontario, Canada.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we are really pleased to have on from Canada, Western Avenue. And we're talking to Nikki and Keith. And Matt, unfortunately, couldn't be with us. But, hey, welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I've heard your music. It's really, really good. And you guys are really kind of like, you know, taking off, taking flight here. Why don't you tell our listening audience a little bit about, you know, where you're going to be heading and, you know, about your CD.
Way back in about 2005, I was getting vocal lessons from this country singer. Her name was Tara Lynn Hart. And yeah, so she was out singing at a place one night and Keith was backing her up on guitar. So I thought I would come watch them, and Tara got me up to sing, so that's where I got introduced to Keith. So right after we met, we sang songs together, which was pretty neat. And then a few months later, I started taking guitar lessons from Keith, and then I had a gig coming up that I was singing at, and I needed some backup, so I asked Keith if he would back me up, and then he called his buddy Matt, who worked at another guitar store where they both taught at, and we got together, and we jammed some songs out, and the gig that we were booked for never actually happened, but we kept things going because we were liking how they were sounding, and so we ended up getting a regular gig here in our hometown. We played there every night for about 2 years, so I think that really brought us together and brought the chemistry together with us. We played mostly cover songs there. And then it was just in April 2012, we decided to start to take things a step further and try recording some original songs. So we started with the song that's on the EP, Highway Heading Out of Town. We recorded that one first. And
you know, that is a really, really cool song, Highway Heading Out of Town. And, you know, for all of our listeners out there, you know, let's hear a little bit of that right now.
Like that highway heading out of town, never looking back, never slowing down. The bigger and better things on the way, mile by mile, day by day. It's all about the journey and not about where we've been.
Yeah, that is just a really, really nice upbeat country single for you guys. Right out of the bat, man, you know, you just like, bang, you got a hit.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so after we recorded that, we really liked how it was sounding, so we thought, hey, we might as well do a whole EP and just keep on doing her. And so we each brought some of our own songs to the table, and we recorded them, and that's how it all came together, and it was great.
Yeah, you know, and your music is wonderful, and, you know, we really enjoy it. First of all, you know, where is your CD available? And I know it's on iTunes, correct?
Yes, it is. It's if you go to our website, which is westernavenue.ca, it gives you a bunch of links for different places you can purchase the CD from.
Nice. And that's CA for Canada, not California, right?
Yeah, Canada.
Now, whereabouts in Canada are you?
We're in Ontario, Canada.
Oh, okay.
About an hour and a half past Toronto.
Toronto, cool city.
Yeah.
So, are you taking this show on the road, or what are we doing from here?
Well, we're actually thinking about going back into the studio to work on some new material, just to keep things fresh. And maybe in my next summer, we'll think about taking things to the road. We haven't got anything set in stone yet, but we'll be working on it anyway.
So you're thinking about going into the back of the studio again, and what's the theme going to be this time around? Is this going to be more like a lot of people have, like, come out of the gate, like you guys did with just a, you know, blockbuster first album, and then people are always waiting to hear the sophomore album, you know, like, what are they going to do to follow it up?
Yeah, it's tricky. We've been writing and writing and writing and writing, and we'll probably continue to be writing all through the fall, since it's kind of a slow time for us as far as shows go. And I think we're going to try to experiment a lot more with different instruments and such, just to give us a different sort of sound, like keep it along the same lines, but just kind of add more variety, I guess you could say.
Now, do you guys enjoy making your videos? I've seen some of your videos, and they're pretty dang cool. So, I mean, who's responsible for that? And, you know, do you enjoy making them?
Yeah, we love making them. They're fun. yeah, our professional video that we did for the song This I Promise You, that was a really neat experience. Yeah, we hired a music director and production team, and they did the whole nine yards. It was really neat. Like, we got to do the video in a really nice place in Toronto. It was like a loft. And it was really neat just seeing the whole process and how they did all the lighting changes and how, like, we basically would be singing through the song about 100,000 times in different scenes and with different lighting. And it was really neat, like, how he did the whole video in this one room but made it look like all these different places. It was really cool.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing when you see a finished product like that. I know that we had a video opportunity. There was a band, a rock band, that came up here. We're in Pacific Northwest in the USA, and they did a video and they invited us to come down and watch their shoot. And when I watched it, we actually got to be in it a little bit. It was just like, wow, this is like a 180 degrees from what I thought it was going to be. Because you have the directors there, and the band is out there and they're playing, but their music is just playing in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lip syncing to it the best they can to it, and they're filming, and they have a theme going. And then they were telling us, like, okay, you guys, you just walk across here, and these people, you walk over from this parking lot. And then when I saw the final thing put together, I was like, wow. I don't recognize it, and I was there. You know?
Yeah, it's pretty neat, yeah. And it was like go, go, go all day. I think we had a max 5-minute break all day. It was crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think Keith had his solo completely memorized by the end of it all.
So what draws you guys, you know, to just like, I want to write music because I want it to be heard, or I just love performing? Or is it a little bit of both?
I guess it could be a little bit of both. Performing is so much fun. And I love, with the writing, I just love creating things and then seeing the finished product. That's what was really cool about recording these songs for the EP, because I was so used to just like hearing my songs to like a piano background or just a guitar background. So to hear it fully produced was really cool.
I bet. And where do you draw your inspiration for your songs? Do they come easy or do they come hard? I mean, you know, you often hear that euphemism about, you know, art is, you know, so hard to do. And when I'm in my darkest, that's when I create the most. I don't know if that's really true or not, is it?
Oh, I don't know. Well, for me, I'm more of a melody maker. I have a lyric writer that I work with. His name's Dave Woods. So he'll send me off lyrics. And then I'll just read through them, and then I'll get behind my piano and see what I can make of them. So I draw my inspiration just from reading the lyrics. So that's for me.
For me, it's some songs start with a guitar progression, and others just kind of pop into my head. It's all inspiration sort of thing.
Well, you know what? You guys make it sound so easy, and your music is just so beautiful. And it, the way you describe it, it's just like, I got an idea in my head, and, you know, it pops in, and I sit down at the piano and play the guitar. And next thing you know, there you have it. for all of us, you know, that enjoy the music and couldn't write a song if our life depended on it. We're like, you know, hey, roses are red. Roses are red. Oh, dang. What rhymes with roses are red?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I don't know, man. I give up. This songwriting stuff is just too damn hard.
Crackers in bed.
Oh, crackers in bed. There you go.
We got a song right there.
Oh, now we have a monster country hit. Crackers in bed. I brought you roses in bed, and it was crackers instead. Now you come up with a guitar riff for that, and we have something going, young fellow. Vicky, you didn't want to talk about that amazingly red flowing dress. I mean, that thing must be about, you know, as big as the province of, you know, British Columbia.
Well, it's actually not a dress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a big, huge piece of fabric, like a silk piece of fabric, and they just clamped it around me.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you look amazing in it.
Oh, thank you. It's funny. People always ask me where I got the dress, and I don't really have a really good story to tell them.
I got it at the fabric store.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazingly easy to fit. You know?
Yep.
All right, everybody. We've been talking to Western Avenue from Ontario, Canada. Be sure to go out and get their EP, Western Avenue, the self-titled album, and their singles, This I Promised You and Highway Heading Out of Town, which we heard earlier in the interview. It's available on iTunes, Amazon, IndiePool, just everywhere where fine music is sold. And we, you know, when you guys have your new album come out, we'd love to have you come back on again.
Sounds great.
Awesome. All right, it's been great talking with you.
You too.
To learn more about Western Avenue, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Thank you.
Cleansed, Season 1. 15 years after the fallout of a massive energy crisis, steadfast homesteaders in rural Maine slog through an off-grid life. This bucolic existence is turned upside down when John Prophet, a soldier still fighting an unwinnable war, arrives with word of a powerful military force setting up in the ashes of old New York. His message falls on deaf ears, except for those of two youths, Maria and Luke, who buck their parents' wishes and set off on a journey filled with grim survivalists, rugged characters, religious maniacs, and dangers of nature that have grown up in this strange land. In what was once New York, life is a tenuous and desperate thing, and the arrival of a military force that offers safety at the expense of freedom is welcomed with open arms. Yet this regime is only the beginning of the troubles in this region. Out of the West, a man comes announcing a great holy war that is to come, and from within the ranks of the military regime comes a man who will stop at nothing to take control of their weapons to sacrifice to his dark god.
Final Room Productions presents The Cleansed, Episode 3, The Road.
Did they ever tell you what happened? Just after we left?
Yeah, I heard about it plenty.
Such a stupid thing.
People do stupid things. People are cruel, Maria. If I've learned anything, it's that people are cruel. Our people, too.
They came. That night.
This is David's part of the story.
Yeah.
He could have done worse. He could have done a lot worse.
Later, they told me that it was almost like in medieval days. The castle being attacked by marauders. I could see that. Those dwellers. They were fierce. They came in the night with all the fire of right behind them. At least so they thought.
I think they're headed towards us.
What kind of idiots are they, walking right toward us across the plain? We've got long-range rifles and 500 feet of field in front of us. Surely they know we've posted a guard.
They made no mystery about their plans, right?
Punish us.
It just doesn't make sense.
Hold.
What?
I lost them.
What?
They were approaching. They were approaching the next rise, now...
Nothing. No one there. Well, they couldn't have gone...
That's what I'm worried about. That's it!
From the north side!
Everyone, calm down! Come on, people, we're better than this!
David!
Jonas, what's the...
The fields! They're burning!
But they wouldn't, they'll kill us!
Yes, David!
Damn it, get fire! Okay, we need... Do you have the hoses out?
We don't have any power. It's too early.
Not the pumps, the water tower!
But if we run out of that water,
look,
David...
If we don't save that food, we're done for, too. Come on!
Damn you, David! I knew this would happen!
It's not the time.
Our people will starve, all on a stranger's account!
Will you help me or stand in my way?
What can I do? Get the hoses...
This lush mind movie features over 30 actors, was recorded on locations throughout southern Maine, and features an original score and the production talents of award-winning producer Fred Greenhall. Called Epic by BBC Radio 4 producer John Dryden, this audio theater production is sure to thrill. What sets this production apart from other full-cast audio dramas is the fact that it was recorded in the field. The result is hard to achieve in the studio and brings a unique sense of being there. The large number of characters and the switching between two plot lines are ably handled by the cast. The need to focus while listening is rewarded by a fresh experience of audio drama, says Audiophile. Frederick Greenhall had been writing stories since childhood and working in radio drama since 2006. Trained as an indie filmmaker, he has brought a film-like approach to his radio stories that includes location production of stories and cinematic sound design. His passion is in telling genre stories with a slant and re-envisioning how the audio format can entertain and illuminate in the 21st century. Fred lives with his wife and daughter in rural Maine in an off-grid home they built together. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, with a baby Louis Vuitton under her underarm. She said, I could tell you rock, I could tell by your charm. Fars girls, you got a flock, I could tell by your charm and your arm, but I'm looking for the one. Have you seen her?
Get Behind Me, Now Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Maya Seligman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.
My psychic told me she have an ex like Serena, Trina, Gina, for Lopez, four kids, and I gotta take all they bad to show this. Okay, get your kids, but then they got their friends. I put up in the bins, they all got a bin. We all went to den, and then I had to pay. If you f***ing with this girl, then you better be paid. You know why? Take too much to touch her. From what I heard, she got a baby by Buster. My best friend said she used to f*** with Usher. I don't care what none of y'all say, I still love her.